Willkommen zum Podcast der Initiative Regenerative Marktwirtschaft. Hier wollen wir herausfinden, wie eine umweltfähige Zukunft macht.
Welcome to today's conversation on the podcast of the Initiative for the Regenerative Market Economy, where we cohere and converse with outstanding individuals, moving us all towards a good world. And I'm very happy to have Ibrahim here today on the show. And without much further ado, as usual, I dive into the most difficult question of them all. Ibrahim, who are you?
Thank you so much, Thomas. My name is Ibrahim. I come from Uganda. It's a region that is affected by climate catastrophes, despite the fact that it's one of the least contributors of climate catastrophes again in this whole universe. So it's a place which is connected to one of the longest ticket pipelines in the whole world. That is EACOP, the East African Football Pipeline. I grew up seeing how communities depend on land, water, and nature for survival. So when these systems are threatened, people's dignity is also threatened. I'm part of a student, a youth group called the Extra Justice Movement Uganda. It's working with climate justice organizing in Uganda. Our work focuses on environmental justice, human rights, and a community resistance against extractivist projects, like the EACOP as mentioned before. So my perspective comes from a desperation, not an inspiration point of view, where my grandmother was evicted from her land in Hoima because of this project that is being developed, the extractivism project that is being developed, the EACOP. So I've been organizing with various ordinary people, farmers, youth, students, market vendors, the young, unemployed people, communities displaced by the oil project, mainly called the PAP, who have been arrested, people who fear speaking publicly because of the repression. That's the kind of people that I've been working with. So to also add some sprinkle, in Uganda, climate change is not an abstract debate. Floods destroy homes, heat affects crops, drought creates anger, forests are cleared for profit because the highest bidder offers to give in money, like the Tugulu forest here. People who are contributing least to climate crisis are suffering the most. Mm-hmm. So for me, activism is not a career or branding exercise. It's about survival, dignity, and protecting the future. Thank you so much for that.
That all requires courage and clarity, right? To do what you just described and to be active in that struggle that you're describing. Where would you say do you get those from, your courage and your clarity?
I think one of the reasons of my courage over time, it's, as I said, my desperation. My grandmother was evicted and she wasn't compensated. She never received justice up to the despite the fact that she died 2 weeks after she came to Kampala. So my silence would be a betrayal to her. My silence would be a betrayal to the people that believe in us, the community people, the young, the future generation, and also for myself, because I also want a better life. I also want a nice future for myself. And also, I want the young people, I want the old, I want people of all generations to see what must be seen and do what must be done. I want to offer enough clarity whereby even if I have to die for this. A legacy has been left behind. Or even if I don't change what I really want to change, at least I might crack the minds of those that will have the courage to change the status quo.
Okay. So would it be fair to say that your ethics, your driver, in a way, your grounding more than your driver, comes from your ancestors, and your purpose comes from your descendants, your future? Would that be a good placing of where you find yourself?
Yeah, I can't deny that. You know, you can't know where you're going unless you know where you come from. So basically, yes, my ancestors can be that, and also my predecessors can be that, because it's a whole lot of combination. And if combined together, of course, anything is possible. So yes.
Okay. So you're not doing this alone, right? So who are you doing this with? Who is giving you the environment that allows you to stay in clarity and in courage? Because your environment essentially dictates a large part of who you are. Yeah. And who is giving that foundation to you at this point in time?
That takes me back to, there is a conversation that has been popular over time, nature-nature, of what influences a person more. Yeah, so I've been working a lot with my friends, a lot, because in our kind of environment, in our kind of activism, we rely more on trust, on building relationships, on friendship, basically. So I've been working with the various people, some of which have been first-hand victims of probably extractivism projects like this. Some of those that have experienced the same catastrophes that have experienced their family members being evicted, being displaced. I've been working with people who know much about climate justice, who know much about environmental protection, more than I do. I've been working with people who just want to stand in solidarity with us, because they also can't bear to see injustices happening and they just keep quiet. So over time, we have built a relationship, we have built trust, because in the end, sometimes, because we are all humans, we all have a breaking point. There is a certain point where you feel like you can no longer continue, where you feel like you no longer have the courage to do what you have to do. But they are these friends that tell you why you started, that make you remember the whole reason why you started, despite the fact that you want to give up. So they are these same people that also help you understand the vision better. They are the vision bearers of our larger campaign, of our goal that we are trying to achieve. So I've been working with my friends, I've been working with the community people. You know, over time, they might seem distant at the start, but after you work together over time, they start being closer, and then at first it goes, because given the dictatorial government that we are experiencing, trust is something, it isn't something that can be built easily, because of also the intelligence. But over time, due to persistence activities and the shared goal, we build that and probably work together in the end. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something you said at the very beginning of your response, which is the victims of extractivism. And the audience listening to this is situated in a place where this is not really a known concept from an experiential perspective. Nobody here really understands what it means to be a victim of extractivism. Could you describe In your words, what a victim of extractivism actually means for a human being?
A victim of extractivism, I would say, is a person that has faced, how can I say? So I'll bring an example. You are living in unharmonious community. You are living in whatever place you are living in, and then your government or a corporation brings a development or brings something that is probably, when it's being explained, it's going to bring about development. So let me be concrete in that line. They are going to build a pipeline in that line. They are going to build a pipeline in your community. But before all of that is done, you don't know anything about the pipeline. You never gave your consent. You don't know about the contract that are being that were assigned in that contract in to support that pipeline. And they just comes and then they are like, okay, we are going to build a pipeline here. You have to move. You just have to move. In a world, in a place where you have built a connection, in a world, in a place where you have had all your ancestors live, in a place where you have a lot of memories, in a place where you have had your agriculture, in a place where a lot of development, or much of your world is situated, they just come, they say, we are going to build a pipeline here. So without your consent, without probably enough compensation, sometimes compensation that is being given is not enough to the people. It doesn't cover the value of the land that is being taken. Some are forcefully evicted. Some are forcefully removed from their land. They don't have a percentage of the profit that are going to be given out after the extractivism project is being built. Much of the profit that are going to be built out of that project are going to benefit people who are outside. Realistically, they are not going to help the people in the community. So an example in motion, the Iroko pipeline, its biggest funder, or who its biggest or the person who owns the biggest percentage, is TotalEnergies, a French company, owns 62% of this pipeline. The place where it's situated, the people who are going to face the most effect out of extractivism, land degradation, the carbon fumes, to mention but a few, they are down here. They have 15%. Uganda has 15%. Tanzania has 15%, and then there is also China North offshore company, that's enough. It has 8% of the project too. So we are going to have 15% of our oil down here without our consent, whereby we don't have a percentage of it. All the community members in that on that land, they don't have a percentage of it all. It has a, it, they don't have a say about it. About it, and it's also going to pass into the various world reserves. Like already, much of the forest have been deforested. More than 50 rivers have been destroyed already. There isn't safe drinking water in these communities. So, various wild animals are already existing. These are groups. These are forests. These are reserves, and then attacking where people are staying simply because they can no longer live in those places where the construction is taking place. You know, there are lights all over this pipeline where it's being used. So these animals assume it's fire. So they have to run away from these places and then end up evading where people are living. And then this pipeline is being guarded by the army. And our army is so ruthless, they end up beating these people where they are passing. So that's, I just wanted to say that somehow a more relatable picture
mm-hmm.
of what an extractivism project would look like to the mm-hmm. people and the whole economy. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for this. This is, from a European perspective, it's theoretically known, but not experientially, right? We don't experience what you experience in your situation, right? Just one more question around this is, you said five rivers have been polluted to a point that there's no drinking water. What is the source of that pollution?
So when they are building this project, this pipeline, some of it's passing through these rivers. So when they are extracting, the rivers basically they just become polluted because of the dirt. So it becomes dirty water by default. Mm-hmm. Because of the dirt, and they don't care. They mm-hmm. don't care mm-hmm. if people in the end have a better alternative, or they don't. So basically, that's it. And then various people are depending on fishing in those areas. Various fish end up being dead. So basically, that means you are disrupting the primary economy of these people.
Mm-hmm.
So you are making it hard for them to gain something to mm-hmm. eat or gain money in the end. So what is the alternative that you are giving to mm-hmm. them? Nothing. You are just giving them empty money. Yeah.
Mm. You shared earlier that you are working with a really diverse and broad team. And people from various backgrounds, and you're working towards a shared goal. But that is not trivial work, right? Getting a diverse group of people aligned towards a shared goal and get them into coherent action and agency is difficult. So I'd like to learn from you of how do you do that? What is your thought process, and what is your way of doing this kind of coordination work?
Thank you so much, Thomas. As I said before, that it's all about building relationships. You know, so many movements fail because they start with ideology before building relationships. You know, people here, given the fact that not much of our elders, people, the community members, went to school. So basically, they can't comprehend a lot of issues if you come with a lot of English. So people do not move because of perfect political language here. People move when they feel seen, when they feel connected, when they believe they matter. So in contexts like Uganda and many parts of Africa, communities already exist deeply in culture. The problem is that modern systems try to isolate people and make them feel powerless. So the first task is not necessarily mobilizing, but is about building trust, building and rebuilding trust between people. So for us, as XR Justice Movement Uganda, coherency starts with listening. We ask simple questions that can easily bring us together, like what hurts in your community, what are people afraid of losing, what kind of future do you want for yourself and for your children, what makes people live, feel alive. So you start seeing a common ground. Probably a farmer can tell you they are afraid of land grab. A student can say they are worried about unemployment. An activist can tell you they are worried about repression. So they are different experiences, but basically all connected to the roots. then we see a better way of how can we create spaces where people act together physically. Basically, it can be community cleanups where community members can be inclusive, climate discussions where various students can have a discussion, non-violent direct actions where activists can be part, mutual aid strategies whereby we are there for each other in kinds of solidarity, training sessions so that we all have a shared goal, sharing meals. So in the end, actions create coherency faster than theory. So an example is when people clean a polluted space together, they begin imagining a different society together. So basically, they begin thinking together. So in other words, I also think movements need emotional honesty. Many activists are burned out because they try to appear strong all the time, but fear, grief, and exhaustion. But these are the realities on ground, especially under authoritarian and dictatorial conditions that are down here. So these healthy movements help create room for vulnerability without collapsing into hopelessness. So that's basically how we create a coherency. It helps all around to bring about people together. So, you know, without clarity, movements just become like any other social club. Without care, they become rigid. So, in other words, we need both.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. So you begin by listening, by creating relationship through listening, by identifying common ground in what you hear, and then you turn that into opportunities for concrete action in different shapes and forms, all the way from having food together to engaging in nonviolent combat. And through that, this kind of action and relationship, you create coherence.
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah.
That's one reason why I see people jumping over the first part and straight into action is because they believe it takes a long time to build those relationships. And they want to move into effect and action immediately. What is your experience around that? Is it does it take a long time to build that trust, to build the relationship, and to do the listening and finding of the common ground? Or what is your experience, how long that takes?
Yeah, it takes a long time. It's not something that is built over time. But of course, they say if you want a strong building, a very, very, very strong building that can last for ages, you have to lay a very, 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 very strong foundation. So it's not basically about how long will it take, but how long will the relationship and the end goal last. So it might take a lot of time to build this relationship realistically. But if we want something concrete, and we are not here just to participate, we are here for results. We don't want to build something that is just going to make probably accountability reports that we made this a one-time off activity. We want to build something that is lasting. So that's why we take all the time needed. Mm-hmm. There are those people that also don't trust us at the first time they see us because of the government censorship. But over time, when they see you, they know that you're on their side. They also, after some time, soften. So if you just rush into action, we won't receive the results we want. Of course, we might have an action with people that are not passionate about what they are doing, with people just want to do action and then let us go. But if we want results in the whole end, we have to endure the person, you know? We have to endure all the difficulties that come with it. So in the end, it helps also to build a family, people who will be there for you, people who you will be there for. So basically, it's not about how long it will take to build the relationship, but how long will it take to bring the overall impact that you have. Will they be everlasting or will they be for a short term? And we are looking at making something sustainable in the long run. Yeah.
That is, feels like a difficult task sometimes, I guess, right? Because the pressure of the reality is quite high. So people would like to see action quickly, but it takes a while to build that relationship. Would you say that this is already embedded in the culture you grew up in, or is that something you're finding now?
I think it's embedded in the culture, because most of the time in our region, we are taught, while growing up, we are taught on a various ways live within the community, and how to live with various people and how to build relationships over time. You know, so some time ago, when you used to grow up, you are not considered your parent's child, but you are considered a community child. So basically, if you do a wrongdoing, you can be disciplined by the entire community here. So basically, it's something we grow up knowing. It's something we grow up embedded in. So it's something that just comes natural. So basically, we just know when a child is being born, it can't just start running. It's various steps that you have to go through. A child has to sit, a child has to start crawling, a child has to start walking before he starts running. If a child starts running right away, then you just know there is a problem. There is definitely a problem. So that's something we have grown up in. Yeah.
Well, the same is true basically everywhere, right? Every culture ultimately rests in the understanding that there is a mutual dependence, and cannot win all by yourself. But it seems to me that some parts of the world have forgotten the relational aspect and the relational dependency, which makes it harder to move into that work that you're describing. If you were to help somebody start something like you're doing in a world where separation has become part of the culture, how would you start that? What is your recommendation of where to begin this journey in such a culture?
You know, last year when I was in the Netherlands, I saw people walking. Everyone was very minding their business. In my mind, I was like, are these robots? Because here, it's very hard to bypass various people. In other, at least you could find someone, hey, hello. But there, people were like robots. So it was a very different kind of environment. But I think for someone who wants to do the same thing within their community, they just have to start small. They have to start local and be consistent with what they are doing. They shouldn't wait for funding or perfection, you know? Various people, before they are doing, they're like, no, we don't have funding for this, we don't have funding for this. But when we are starting this, we never had a single penny. We just had the zeal, we just had the character, we just had we just had what it took. We are around ourselves. We are the starting people for it all. So we never had perfection. We didn't really have a lot of clarity with all of the things that probably I know now. I think if someone wants to start something like this, they should first listen before leading. Spend time understanding your community deeply. Do not arrive with already made up answers. You know, people have various perceptions. They just assume when they're, this might be this and this, this might be this and this. But you have to be factual. Do not arrive with already made up answers. In other words, you can observe, go to the community. What are the problems facing these people daily? What language do they use? What do they value? What fears silence them? Who already has trust within the community? So many people fail because they import probably a language disconnected from people's lived reality. You know, as I said also before, build relationships before structures. You know, movements are built through trust, not logos and fancy languages. You know, people who meet repeatedly visit themselves, help themselves, show up consistently, have a more better working relationship or have a better future of working together than people who just come out of the blue and then disappear. Because in communities that I've went to, various people have seen Ingos, civil society organizations that just come and go. People trust actions more than promises, you know? Another step is they should create small collective actions. They don't have to try to do big actions at the first start. An example, it can be clean up, tree planting, community dialogue, food sharing. Small actions help people experience urgency. And with that, urgency is important because many people secretly believe nothing can change realistically. So urgency helps to create that it's important for people to create or to take action. So over time, you could develop a political understanding slowly, very slowly. So you don't have to overwhelm people with a complex theory immediately. Start small, connect issues that will live their experiences. An example, if you go to a community where there is a rising food prices linked to climate shock, start with that. Flooding, that's something everyone can see there at their fingertips. A land displacement because of extractivism projects. You know, people understand politics better when connected to real life before bringing the whole different language or complex language. Start with something practical they are seeing there and then. So, you know, to be better coordinated, you can create a leadership structure within the people. Inside themselves, you know, they have inside those people, they have their people that they believe in or trust in. You know, if you create leadership, you know, over time movements die when it's all about one person. So teach others how to speak, teach others how to organize, how to protect themselves and protect others inclusively. How to think critically. So, you know, if you create, you know, in Africa, strongman leadership culture damages communities and movements. So, communities that are dependent on personalities instead of shared responsibility end up perishing, end up not going so far. So create a leadership structure, empower others, whereby they could be resilient for themselves. Whereby in the end, you end up being just a coordinator or coordinating the whole process, but having people that are sustainable, people that take their own decisions in the long run. Yeah. Another fact, especially in the Global South, is prepare for repression. You know, that's something that you just can't live out in an environment like Uganda. You have to create, you have to have that in mind, you know. Like human rights defenders have experienced arrest, intimidation, surveillance, violence. So also communities need legal support system, emergency contact, safety planning, security knowledge, emotional support structures, you know. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So essentially you're saying that anywhere you start by building relationship and you start small.
Yeah.
And then you start taking small actions to create coherence, and then you empower the people in those relationships and action to be more resilient by providing and supporting, nurturing the skills that are needed to take collective action. So it's not dependent on one person, and everybody can step into leadership.
Definitely.
That's what I'm hearing. Okay.
Yes.
This all rests on one core, which is the trust that every human that you speak with, that you get into relationship with, ultimately, when they look at what is important in life, they find something very similar. Which leads me to the question, what kind of insight or what kind of thing it is that we find when we do that? The maybe an insight that is not really visible to us. It may be something that is so natural that we don't even notice it anymore. Right? Like breathing or reading. There's a moment when we started breathing in our life and so we don't think about it. And there's a moment when we started reading in our life and we don't think about it, and we cannot stop either of them. And maybe there are insights of that category that we don't even notice that are fundamental to our human experience. What would you say you find in your conversations when you think about what people see is important to life from their angle?
I think an insight, I think one invisible truth that I found in that is that humans are so adaptable. Humans easily adapt to the various situations. Sometimes adapting is good, realistically, but sometimes it's bad. So, in other words, humans sometimes accept by whatever they repeatedly practice. So, if people repeatedly practice silence, they become silent. If people repeatedly practice obedience starts feeling natural. If people repeatedly practice fear becomes the order of the day. But also the opposite is true. When people repeatedly practice courage becomes more normal. I saw this with various young activists here in Uganda. Given that it's the kind of place I'm in, so many people were terrified before they took their first action to the street. But one of the things I saw afterwards, they are now the organizers. They are helping others overcome fear. So I think human beings are deeply rational creatures. We borrow courage, hope, and imagination from each other than we realize. And maybe one of the biggest hidden truths is people do not only want to survive, people want me, want meaning, even under repression, under poverty, under uncertainty. People still search for dignity, belonging, and purpose. So I think various movements, various organizations, various entities could become strong when they understand this deeply.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ibrahim, I want to thank you for the important and difficult work that you've taken onto yourself on behalf of the people around you, but I think even more than that, on behalf of all of us, because breaking the extractive paradigm is the order of the day, as you phrased it earlier. We are breaking through extractivism the very foundation of what makes life on Earth possible, especially human life. And we must protect and nurture and save it. So thank you for all the work you're putting into this. If somebody wants to connect with you and learn more about your work and feels inspired by what you do, how can they learn more? How can they reach you?
Thank you so much, Thomas. We have a website. It's XR Justice Movement Uganda. We are also using that same name on various social media handles. That is X, formerly Twitter, and also Instagram. We are using XR Justice Movement Uganda. I think from that, people can have a lot of knowledge of the various things that we are doing. And also, on personally, Mpima Ibrahim, Mpima, and then Ibrahim, IBRAHIM, on various social media handles. That is LinkedIn, that is X, that is Instagram, and Blue Sky. So basically, various people that want to see what we are doing, and also probably find out more clarity about extractivism project. An example is the EOCOP. Mm-hmm. They could reach out from those media handles. We are always available to answer the various questions, to also offer clarity mm-hmm. on various better ways they could support, and probably various other people they could reach out to you, and you could form a connection. Yeah.
I'm happy to, absolutely. And we will put all of this information into the show notes to make it easy to reach out. Ibrahim, thank you again for the work and for your time this morning to share all of this with us. Thank you.